Every great drama has an element of suspense, and the story of Ruth is no exception. Today here on Turning Point, Dr. David Jeremiah introduces us to the mysterious unnamed relative who stands between Ruth and Boaz. Will he spoil their plans to be married? The answer lies ahead as the series Ruth, Romance and Redemption continues. To introduce today's message, A Worthy Redeemer, here's David.
Well, we thank you for joining us as we move toward the conclusion of our series on the book of Ruth. And today we're in the fourth chapter, the last chapter of the book. And the title of today's lesson is A Worthy Redeemer. Well, the book of Ruth is about a real story, about a real woman by the name of Ruth. But of course, in the story itself are many other applications that will become so evident as we move toward the end of the book. So let's open our Bibles to the fourth chapter of Ruth and continue our discussion. Today, we're talking about a worthy redeemer.
Now, the book of Ruth is one of the most fascinating stories in all of the world's literature. Although 30 centuries have come and gone, it has lost none of its charm. It is one of the great short stories, if you look at it from the standpoint of literature, because all of the elements which make up the average human heart are in this story. Sorrow is turned into singing. Purity overcomes prejudice. Lust is conquered by love. Self-sacrifice is rewarded both in the hero and the heroine. Here, true love becomes the story of one's heart. And it is a great story. If you were not even a Christian, if you were just going to read the Bible for reading it as literature, the book of Ruth would be fascinating. As you remember, the story is all about a family. The father, whose name was Elimelech, and the mother, whose name was Naomi. A little family that lived in Bethlehem and left that city under duress because there was a famine and they weren't willing to trust God to take care of them. So they went down to Moab, supposedly for just a few months until the famine blew over, but they ended up staying there for 10 years, a whole decade of disobedience to God. For those of you who need this reminder, it is a strong, strong indictment of not trusting the Lord. For in that 10 years, Elimelech the father died, the two boys, Mahlon and Chilion, both died, and the only original member of the family left was Naomi, the mother. In the time that they were there, Mahlon and Chilion had married two girls from Moab. Those girls' names were Ruth and Orpah. And they came to the threshold of the city of Moab, and the two girls had the choices. Orpah decided she would bet her life on going back to her own culture, finding another husband, and somehow raising up children to the future. But Ruth clung to Naomi. And so Ruth goes back to Bethlehem, and now there's two. There's Naomi and her daughter-in-law, and they're back in the city. Now you have to remember that when they left Bethlehem, Elimelech and his family were of the aristocratic members of Bethlehem. They were of the Ephrathites. They were wealthy people. Naomi says, I went out full and I've come back empty. When they came back, they had nothing. All their land had been sold off. There was no money. There was no food. And Ruth, in order to put some bread on the table, went out to glean in the fields. And if you remember, she walked around behind the harvesters picking up the grain that they had missed. And she collected it all and brought it back to her mother-in-law. And that's how they existed in the early days of the return. But the story becomes so intriguing because all of a sudden it becomes apparent that Ruth has been gleaning in the field of a man whose name was Boaz. And that's where the plot thickens. Because Boaz, we discover, is the one key person in their life who has the possibility to bring hope out of hopelessness and some kind of future out of their despair. Well, as you know, Naomi was a meddling mother-in-law. And she got involved in this thing, and she set up this meeting between Boaz and Ruth, and we went through that whole midnight meeting that took place. And Boaz has the right to redeem Ruth, to take her as his wife. But all of a sudden he remembers that there is one other person living in Bethlehem who has a closer blood tie to Ruth and her family than he does. And he is not permitted to be her redeemer until, first of all, he finds out about this other person. That's where we were when we left. There's another man in the picture. What are we going to do? Well, the fourth chapter will help us with that, but before we get into the verses that are before us, I need to give you just a little background so you will understand what's going to happen here, because without this background, this is going to be kind of fuzzy. We don't want it to be fuzzy, we want it to be clear. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of redemption. We talk about this person, Boaz, being a redeemer. What does that mean? The word redemption is one of the key words of the Old Testament. It's found in the Bible in this particular section, words that surround redemption like buy or purchase. It's found 15 times in just a few verses. The word redeem means to purchase out of bondage, to go and buy and set free. A person is set free by the loosing of the bond. To buy back is another term that describes it. In the period of the judges, during which the story of Ruth takes place, there were three major ways that redemption happened in the culture, in the sociology of the day. First of all, a person could be redeemed from bondage. In the Old Testament law, which is recorded in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 47 and 48, now if a sojourner or a stranger close to you becomes rich, and one of your brethren who dwells by him becomes poor and sells himself to the stranger or the sojourner close to you or to a member of the stranger's family, after he is sold, he may be, here's the word, he may be redeemed again. One of his brothers may redeem him. Now the story is, here's this person who's real poor and he lives by somebody who's real rich, and one day he gets desperate, he doesn't have any money, so he just goes and he sells himself to the person like a slave. And the Bible says when that happens, one of his brothers can come and buy him back, and he can be redeemed out of bondage. A second way that redemption happened in this period of time was you could be redeemed out of poverty. And this is recorded for us again in the Old Testament law in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 25. Read carefully. If one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possession, and if his redeeming relative comes to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. Now, as many of you know, in the Old Testament, every 7 years was the year of Jubilee. And so every 7 years, whatever was taken or was given away, you got back. Wouldn't that be something? But in between those 7 years, the laws of redemption took place so that here's a brother who he's at the very bottom economically. He's bottomed out. He's lost everything. And all he's got left is a few of his possessions, maybe some cattle or whatever. And so in desperation, he sells off all his possessions and he's poor. He's got nothing left. The Bible says that one of his brethren could come out of love for him. One of his brothers, and he could buy all that stuff back and give it to him, and he would have been redeemed of his poverty. The third way that redemption happened in the book of Judges is really at the core of today's story, and I want to take just a moment and show it to you. It's what we would call being redeemed from the dead. And this is really a little bit strange in some ways in light of how we do things today. We visited this recently, but I want to review these verses with you in Deuteronomy chapter 25. A person could be redeemed from the dead. Now watch carefully, because this is the key to the rest of this lesson. If brothers dwell together, and one of them dies and he doesn't have a son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside the family. Her husband's brother shall go into her, take her as his wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn son which she bears will succeed to the name of the dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel. So a person could be redeemed from the dead. Now here's the story here. It's the very story we have before us in the book of Ruth. Mahlon goes down to Moab and marries Ruth, but then he dies. They have no children. And Ruth and her mother-in-law come back to Israel, and she is without a husband and she's without a son, and she has no heritage. She's going to lose all of her legacy. She has nothing. When Ruth dies, in the present situation, there will be no one to carry on the name of her husband in Israel. And so the Bible provided for the fact that under those circumstances, someone who was a near relative, we call him a kinsman, could come alongside Ruth and take her as his wife, and the first son that would be born to that union would be as if her husband had never died and it would have been their son. So redeeming from the dead. Now, not just anyone could do that. There were three qualities that were absolutely necessary if someone was going to be a redeemer. The prerequisites of redemption were, number one, he had to be a relative. You couldn't just go out and say, oh, well, that looks like a nice person. I believe I'll redeem her. No, you had to be from the family. And if you go back through the book of Ruth, you will discover that many times in the book of Ruth, the issue of relationship is established. For instance, go back in your Bibles to the second chapter, and notice the first verse. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, it says in chapter 2, verse 1. Notice chapter 2, verse 3. Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. There it is, he's a relative. Notice chapter 2, verse 20. Naomi is speaking, and she said, this man is a relationship. He's a relation of ours. He's one of our close relatives. And Boaz is speaking about this in chapter 3, verses 12 and following. And he says, now it is true that I'm a close relative. However, there's a relative closer than I. So the whole issue of relationship was critical. You had to redeem somebody who was in your own family. You couldn't just go out. There was no redemption at large. All right. Secondly, you had to be able to do the redemption. In other words, if you've lost everything and you're poor and your only living relative is poorer than you are in bad shape. He can't redeem you because he's got nothing to do it with. So in order to be a redeemer, you have to be a relative. And number two, you have to have the ability to do it. Now notice what it says about Boaz earlier in the book of Ruth. And you've seen these verses. There was a relative of Naomi's husband. Now watch this. He was a man of great wealth. So he qualified. He had the ability to do it. He had the resources, the money in the bank. Thirdly, he had to be willing. I mean, you could be a relative and you can have money, but you could say, thank you, but no thank you. I'm not in this. I'm not going to do it. You had to be willing. And once again, Boaz has already confessed the fact that he's willing. Because when he had the opportunity, he said, I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Ruth chapter 3, verse 13. So, up until this point, everything's okay. Here's Boaz who's going to redeem Ruth, raise up a son to her and her family. He's the right person in the sense that he's a relative. Number two, he's got money. And number three, he's okay with it. He'll do it. But all of a sudden, into his mind pops this thought. There's somebody else who's a closer relative than I am, and I can't take this responsibility until, first of all, we pass it by him. So we come now to the process of redemption. That's what the fourth chapter is all about. Boaz has got to figure out how to deal with this other person. And you know the interesting thing about this other person? We never are told his name. We have no idea what his name was. He's the unnamed relative. How many of you would like to have some unnamed... No, never mind. I won't go that... We won't go there today, all right? Unnamed relative. Now, in order to figure this out, he has to set up what we would call a court proceeding. This is a matter of legal contest. And what we're going to do is look at these proceedings kind of using our language of the courtroom, but looking at the Old Testament language in that setting. Now, you see, in our world today, the courtroom is more of a private thing, or at least it was until they started taking television cameras into the courtroom. It's behind closed doors. But in the days of Ruth and Boaz, the courtroom was the most public of all hearings. And the venue for this particular contest was the gate of the city. Notice chapter 4, verse 1. Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. In the old cities of Jerusalem and Israel, the major events took place in the gathering of the elders at the gate of the city. For instance, we'll see in the Old Testament how this happened over and over again. In the book of Deuteronomy, they tell you what happened to a family that had a rebellious son. All you rebellious sons, take note. This is what they did. If a man had a stubborn and rebellious son who would not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city, to the gate of the city. So you got this? The guy's messing around. He won't do what his parents tell him. They confront him, and he keeps doing it. So it says they take hold of him. He'd be up for child abuse if he did it today, but they took hold of the kid, and they took him out to the gates of the city, and all the elders of the city are going to preside over this thing. Now, the rest of the story I don't want to tell you, because what happens to this guy is he's never a problem again. You can look it up in your own Bible. He will never be rebellious again. His rebellious days are over. The next time you see this in the Old Testament, you remember the story of Absalom when he had this coup against his father David? Guess where he set up shop? 2 Samuel 15 verse 2 says, Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate, because that was the power place in the city. He would go out there and set up his shop, and he was gathering information so he could effect this coup against his dad. In the book of Job, chapter 29, verse 7, we see it again. I went out to the gate of the city. When I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged arose and stood. So the gate of the city was the primary place for all these major gatherings. You remember when Lot was in Sodom, and he finally got to the top of the leadership structure in Sodom. Where was he? He was seated at the gate of Sodom. So they've set up court now. Boaz has come to the court. The venue is the gate of the city. Now he summons the defendant. Notice what happens. When Boaz went up to the gate and sat down, behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, come aside, friend, sit down here. So he came aside and sat down. Boaz is standing at the gate of the city. He sees everybody going in and out, so he knows that who this person is that's a close relative. And the King James has a wonderful way. It says, ho, such a one. Come here. In our language today, it would be, hey you. Hey you, over here. So Boaz is standing there, and he summons him. And it says here, after he had summoned this person, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. And the elders of the city sat down. 5 times in the first 3 verses of Ruth 4, everybody's sitting down. So now the elders are seated. And these are people that Boaz would have known, because he was a primary mover and shaker in the city of Bethlehem. So he got all these key leaders together. And the courtroom is set up. Do you see it? They're set up in the gate of the city. The defendant has been summoned. The elders are in place. And now they state the case. Boaz is the prosecuting attorney, and he states the case. Notice verse 3. Then he said to the close relative, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold a piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. And I got to pause right there and say, I can't help but think Boaz was just shaken when he was saying these words, because there was no human way he wanted this guy to redeem Ruth, because he wanted her. I doubt if he presented a very convincing case. I think he said those words kind of like, you know, I'm sure you wouldn't be interested in this. I'm sure you wouldn't have any desire to do this. But if you do, fine. If you don't. Well, he gets to the end of it after he presents the request for redemption. And notice the response, verse 4. The end of the verse says, and this unnamed relative said, I will redeem it. I'll do it. And you can just see Boaz's heart sinking. What do you mean you're doing it? You don't want to do this. No, I'll do it. So now he's going to give him some more of the requirements. I love this. Boaz wants to make sure, do you really understand what you're getting into here? So notice verse 5. You got your Bibles open. Look down to verse 5. So Boaz said, I want you to understand this. On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. In other words, this is not just a piece of property, sir. You're getting a wife along with it. Oops. And the guy begins to think about this. And all of a sudden, he wants a little more time. And we come to his refusal of the redemption in verses 6 through 8. Remember, one of the qualities of a redeemer is he has to be willing, doesn't he? This man is a relative. He obviously has the money. He's got the first two nailed, but the last one's going to keep him from being the redeemer because he doesn't want to be the redeemer. And he says in verse 6, the close relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the custom in the former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. So what happened was, after he found out that Ruth was a part of the package, and this is not a put down on Ruth, he said, I can't do it or I'm going to lose my own inheritance. Now, why would that happen? I've pondered that and I've tried to study. These laws are kind of interesting in the Old Testament, but here was the deal. What he was saying was is this, if I should take Ruth to myself and she became my wife and we had a son and all of our other children died and he was the only one to survive, he would inherit not only that which belonged to Ruth and Mahlon, but he would get everything that belongs to me as well. I doubt if there were prenuptial agreements back in those days. And so he said, I can't risk marrying Ruth or I will lose all of my own inheritance.
What a predicament, and what a place to stop in our discussion. We hope to be with you tomorrow right here on this good station.
This is Mark Larson. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series, Ruth, Romance and Redemption, on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.
You're listening to TWR Africa, speaking hope to the world.
Yeah. ways can we ever